favor?
Aye.
Item two, apologies and absence.
Madam Mayor, received apologies from councillors Dodson, Gareth Jones and Loughlin.
Madam Mayor, can I also add to that, councillor Ambrose?
And councillor Spencer, Madam Mayor. Okay. Item three, do we have any declarations of interest on any matters arising this evening? Okay. Item four, mayor's announcements, which is there's a charity afternoon tea on Wednesday, the 22nd of April, at the Riverside Restaurant at Stafford College. Invitations will be sent out in due course. The next one for your diary is the Mayor's Civic Dinner on Wednesday, the 29th of April, at Stafford Rugby Club, and invitations will also be sent out in due course. Item five, public question time.
Neil Mather.
Item six, councillor Sessions.
Neil Mather.
Item seven, notice of motion.
Neil
Mather. Item eight, to receive nominations for the office of mayor and deputy mayor for the municipal year 2026-27. No vote will be taken today on this matter, and nominations will be referred to the annual meeting on the 16th of May. Nominations for mayor, please.
Madam Mayor, I'd be honoured to nominate Councillor Mark Winnington to be the next mayor in the municipal year 2026-27.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would be very pleased to second that nomination.
Thank you very much. I think that's the first time in my life I've ever been described as worthy. but it is something I can aspire to over the next year. Thank you, Madam Mayor, for what you've done to this point. Obviously, you've got the rest of the year to go forwards. It's a great honour for me to be elected, and I thank the group for having faith in me. I was born in Stafford, went to Stafford Hospital with a patch on my eye for several of my early years. I had a lazy eye, but it's woken up a bit now. I went to Stafford Grammar School at the end of the sixth, when it was in the centre, and when it was called Colditz. So I look forward to representing you all, and I do hope that if you can get to some of the Mayor's events, please come along. We've got some exciting ideas, we just need to sort of bring them to fruition now. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Councillor Linton. Congratulations. Can I have nominations for the Office of Deputy
Madam Mayor, it's my pleasure to nominate Councillors Frank Douglas Joseph James to the office of Deputy Mayor of Stafford Borough for the ensuing municipal year.
Thank you. Is that seconded?
Seconded.
Madam Mayor, thank you very much to the Council for spreading this on from me again. And hopefully with supporting Mark over there, we have a successful year. Thank you very much to everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor James. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Madam Mayor, the purpose of this report, which is the Council Tax Resolution 2026-27, is to set out the proposed council tax for the year 2026-27. The recommendations are, one, that the proposed council tax as set out in the Council Tax Resolution in Appendix 1 be approved, and two, that a named vote be taken, as it has been for the last several years. The reasons for the recommendation are set out in paragraph 2.4. Now, Madam Mayor, on the 10th of February of this year, Council determined our budget for 26-27 and set a Band D council tax rate of £184.09. Well, the Council has now received notification from the major precepting authorities and from the parish stroke town precepting authorities of the relevant precepts. One point worth noting is in the appendix. If we look at Band D for Stafford, the Borough Council's tax for Band D is £184.09. But the County Council is £1,686.42. And then we have additional amounts from the Police Commissioner and from the Fire Authority, and of course some minor amounts from the various parishes. But you can see the great bulk of this tax goes not to the Borough Council, but it goes to the County Council. And our relatively puny £184.09 becomes a whopping £2,269.85 when all the other authorities are added, including especially the County Council. Now, Madam Mayor, I make no comment on the needs of the other authorities, but I simply point out once again that although we are responsible for collecting the council tax, we only keep about 10% of it. And I keep saying that because eventually it will get through to all the residents that we don't keep all the money we collect. If only we did, we would be living in nirvana. But we don't. And so I'm just making that point again. So the council tax resolution is attached as Appendix 1, and I ask council to agree the recommendations.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, councillors. Yes, I remember the 10th of February. It lives long in the memory, and I think the operative word will be long in the memory. This is, after all, a follow-on report, so it will be of no surprise to anyone in this room that I can't support it because, you know, we didn't need to put up our council tax. The council tax that the cabinet member refers to at length again, albeit, you know, comparing it with the county council is like comparing apples with oranges or apples with bananas or even apples with carrots or courgettes. The councils do different things as well, the cabinet member knows, so it's just a smokescreen, and it's not helpful for residents to understand that, you know, the county council delivers adults and children's social care, highways, well, we won't mention that, and other such things. The reason that I can't support this proposal this evening is that we didn't need to increase council tax in the first place, as well the alternative budget indicated. We didn't need to take more residents' money because we had sufficient reserves, and there are cumulative underspends in this year's budget in any case, so only building those reserves. I think it'd be really useful if the cabinet member with local government reorganisation round the corner was going to indicate how we made sure that the £17 million of long-standing reserves that are in the council's budget post-LGR don't get swallowed up and eaten up by another authority, because that would be a really interesting discussion to have. I can't support this as it stands, though.
Any other comments?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Madam Mayor, I did rehearse all the reasons why we were raising the council tax rate by the government request of 2.99%. I went through all those at the last meeting. I also went through the fact that we have a lot of headwinds, a lot of risks coming our way, and it's our job to try and keep the ship on an even keel. Not that only, but also our tax base. For years we said we don't want to damage our tax base, we don't want to reduce it. And that's another reason. That they are all very good reasons for doing what we did, getting the council tax to be 2.99%. We did, of course, freeze car parking charges for the year, and we also froze the ground bid charges for the year as well. So we've given something back as well. So I think, you know, I'm not quite sure how strong that argument is from the other side. It's interesting that they actually, I believe in the Conservative group and the County Council, they actually criticised reform initially because reform wanted to increase council tax by less than the amount that the government was saying they should do. And I believe the leader of the Conservatives on that occasion said it would be unwise to do so in the longer run. There you are, Madam Mayor. That's politics for you.
Any other comments? Okay, thank you. In accordance with the council procedure rules, a recorded vote will be taken. I would like to ask the council solicitor to explain the procedure.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would call each member's name out in alphabetical order. If you could clearly state whether you are for, against, or you abstain from the recommendation. Councillor Ashton.
Abstain.
Councillor Beattie.
Abstain.
Councillor Carter.
For.
Councillor Cook.
For.
Councillor Cooper.
Abstain.
Councillor Cross.
Abstain.
Councillor Anagella.
Abstain.
Councillor Piagella.
Abstain.
Councillor Gordon.
For.
Councillor Godfrey.
For.
Councillor Hood.
For.
Councillor F. James.
For.
Councillor R. James.
Abstain.
Councillor Jones. Oh, sorry. Councillor Kenny?
For.
Councillor Leeson?
For.
Councillor McEwen?
For.
Councillor A. McNaughton?
For.
Councillor D. McNaughton?
For.
Councillor A. Nixon?
For.
Councillor L. Nixon? Councillor Pardesi?
For.
Councillor Pearce?
For.
Councillor Firth?
Abstain.
Councillor Phillips?
Abstain.
Councillor Powell? Councillor J. Reid?
For.
Councillor Ailey?
For.
Councillor Rose?
For.
Councillor Mattel?
For.
Councillor Sandiford?
For.
Councillor Thorley?
For.
And Councillor Winnington?
Abstain.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Madam Mayor. It's early in the evening. Madam Mayor, I've been implored I think from all sides of the council, not to be too long in my speech. I have listened, as I always do, Madam Mayor, and I've cut it down from 10 pages to 2. So, if I haven't covered all the main points, that's because I've been trying to get it down, get it reduced, so I don't take too much of this council's time, or bore them too much of it. Now, Madam Mayor, this is a dense, technical and lengthy report, so I will briefly highlight the salient points and encourage any members who want to ask detailed questions to approach the council section 151 officer for an explanation. I'm sure he would be absolutely delighted to hear your questions and give you the answers. I would add that this report has also been submitted and considered at the Audit and Accounts Committee meeting yesterday evening. So they've already scrutinised this report as well. But it has to be submitted to council as required, statutorily. Now, the purpose of this report is covered in Section 1. Recommendations are shown in Section 2. The latter, the recommendations, are statutory requirements to ensure that the council's capital plans are affordable, prudent, and sustainable, and that cash, investments, and any borrowing are managed responsibly. Now, if I give you the headlines. Number one, the council is debt-free and no borrowing is anticipated in 2026-27. Two, the capital program for 26-27 is fully financed through grants, capital receipts, and revenue, so no borrowing requirement arises. Three, the council is expected to maintain a net investment position with significant cash balances throughout the period. Four, planned capital expenditure for 26-27 totals £13.701 million. Eight, all prudential indicators show a sustainable and affordable position. Nine, expected investment balances are between £19 million to £27 million. 10, forecast investment income for 26-27 is £1.867 million. Priorities for investment is security, liquidity, and yield. Yield comes last. Security and liquidity are more important. No borrowing is planned for 26-27. And the underborrowed position is continued to minimise the cost of our debt. Right, well, in terms of risk management and governance, treasury risks are managed via prudential indicators and established governance, and they're all set out in paper. Audit and Accounts Committee scrutinises, as I mentioned before, and Council approves the strategies. Now, there's another way of looking at these figures. I mean, you know, we could look at numbers, we could look at tables, we could look at graphs, we could look at concepts. But most of us on this council are laymen or lay people. We're not trained accountants, we're not experienced financiers or whatever. So we can look at it in another way. We can ask about such matters as to whether, one, there are checks and balances and guardrails and scrutiny, and two, whether the Treasury management team are cautious and prudent rather than reckless and risk-taking. For reading the report and the appendices, it's clear that the mindset of the team is one of caution and prudence, and there is not an appetite for risk-taking. For example, the council does not have any commercial investments or non-treasury investments. Also, the team follow the CIPFA, that's the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy, the CIPFA codes, and they are the gold standard, basically. If you follow CIPFA rules, you're basically bonded. If you don't, you could get into trouble. But our people follow CIPFA rules and the code whenever necessary. As well, of course, as guidance from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government. The report is studied with references to CIPFA. Reporting arrangements also follow the requirements of the CIPFA Code of Practice. The team seeks external professional advice. The council uses a new firm, Arling Close, as its external treasury management advisors. However, the team are not solely reliant on that firm, wisely so, and will also use market data and information. There is oversight and scrutiny by specific committees and or the whole council. Next one, there is training for officers and councillors, and training is planned to be delivered over the next 12 months. Madam Mayor, before concluding, I would like to express my thanks and that of all members of the council to the Treasury team for producing this very detailed, very dense, very technical and very time-consuming report, and for all the important work they do over the year in protecting and generating funds for the council in a cautious and prudent manner. Madam Mayor, I ask that the recommendation set out in section 2 of the report be accepted and approved.
Thank you, Councillor. Is that seconded?
Yeah.
Thank you. Are all in favour? Oh, sorry, any comments? Comments? Yes, thank you.
Sorry, I thought I was going to get called, it's fine. This is a really important report, and it's one that doesn't really get the time and attention that it really deserves based on the input from the relevant officers and the work that goes on day by day in optimising our position and ensuring that this council has a strong financial base. You know, it's not about small numbers. You know, last year's capital balance was £66 million, this year's is £26 million. And long run, it's £17 million. This is public money. This is not our money, so we have a duty to make sure that it's looked after diligently and invested for the best returns against the risk and liquidity. And I thank everyone who's been involved in doing this, because you can't just invest this money, given it's public money, in some offshore bank account, and it needs to be looked after and treasured. And arguably, Madam Mayor, this council's strong financial position, which we talked about last time around at the February 10th council meeting, is built based on the strong reserves and financial position that it has. It is the envy of all other Staffordshire authorities around us. And if we're not careful, we'll get gobbled up as part of local government reorganisation. And so I make the same point I made on the previous report, and I would urge the Cabinet Member to think about how we make sure that Stafford Borough's resources, which were built up by Stafford residents, do remain as such. Equally, to be debt-free in local government is, particularly when you look across the country, is really unusual. And, you know, year by year we take this for granted, but that is because of prudent work over many, many years. And we should not only thank the officers involved in getting to that position over many years, but also any of the Cabinet members who have been involved in delivering that financial position.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've just got a question that seems very small compared to the very profound statement that's just been made, which I absolutely agree with. It's on section 106 on page 17, and it's probably a question of following section 151 officer, but I don't quite understand the figures. Page 17. There's two columns, two sections. One is section 106, brackets cover 6,7853, and then section 106, other revenue. The first one seems to dip dramatically from 26-27, but the other one also seems to dip quite significantly, which makes me wonder, is that an assumption that the building that takes place in Stafford is going to reduce substantially, or what?
Thank you for that question. I'll ask in section 151 to reply.
So the largest space is just a presentational thing because they're held at different cost centres. There's nothing more than that for section 106. So you can tally those together. You can see related because we've just flatlined it in anticipate, because it's too far into the future just to really know what's going to happen. 26, 27, 27, 28, 22, 29. The other ones, they are as it is, and what we currently have built into our spending.
So
it's
the last bit again, continue.
So, just split it over different cost centres, presentation, or nothing more than that for it.
Yeah.
For 90 years, we've just kept them at the same level because they're far enough into the future for us not to be sure what they're going to be spent on at this point in time, or what income, or what more we may collect in that future bit. For the first 2 years, you can see them changing in line with our anticipated receipts and our planned expenditure.
And that's reducing.
Point of order. Point of order? Could the section 151 officer, just in relation to the question that was asked, confirm whether the actual majority of the movement of funds is due to the ongoing Rally Park project?
I can't confirm that off the top of my head. I can look into it and come back to you.
But I'd like to draw our attention to page 30, section 5.106, which talks about the reputational aspects of our investment accounts. I know this is raised in audit accounts this week. I'm not expecting necessarily an answer now, but hopefully a commitment towards transitioning the borough to be really robust about the ethical investments that we're making and where that money ends up. I appreciate the landscape is complex, but it is possible to get a good understanding of where our investments go whilst being financially secure and reputationally secure. So, for example, you could have exclusion criteria about things that we do not wish public funds to be invested in because we would not perceive it ethical on behalf of our residents, as an example. I'm not saying we come up with a list now, and I'm not saying there's a definitive list that I would necessarily suggest, although I would personally have ideas of my own. But what I would suggest is that we take that a little bit further. There's a small paragraph in the Treasury Management Policy. I think that's a great start. When asked yesterday, there was little details provided in terms of what that means, kind of in practice, and what we might look at. And I'd like for us to investigate that as a borough over the coming years to ensure that not only is our investment financially secure, but that we are securing the reputation of our borough and where our funds are invested.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emma. Actually, an awful lot of our money is invested in the money markets, really. You know, so overnight money, for example. I did say that one of our crucial things is liquidity. In other words, we need to get hold of our money very quickly as and when we need it. We don't want it left in investments or savings, which are going to take us a while to get out of. So much of our money is very, very liquid, and it's in banks of one sort or another. But we'll look at it. This report is somewhat technical in parts, although the underlying theme is relatively straightforward. What's happened is that the government have announced that from April, this April, universal credit claimants will receive increases in their benefit greater than the rate of inflation. And it's also removed the two-child cap. Now, it's felt that the additional money shouldn't result in these families having to pay more council tax. Instead, the money should be available to meet their day-to-day expenses, as was intended by the government. If we did nothing, these people would pay more council tax, so the proposed changes would protect their reduction at their current levels. In other words, they get to keep the money which they've been given by Universal Credit. Now, while reviewing this scheme, the opportunity has also been taken to close a potential loophole in the scheme, which relates to self-employed claimants and also to ensure protection for people receiving armed forces compensation payments. That's the LGBT stuff in the armed forces compensation payments. And also extending the time people stranded abroad in war-torn areas can receive their local council tax reduction. Otherwise they can be penalised as well. Now the changes recommended in this report don't significantly change the tax base and do not result in significant costs. And you can see that at the end under financial matters. It's not going to cost us much. It's not really worth borrowing too much. We can do it, and it's a way of helping those people on universal credit already being helped by the government, rather than taking away the money they are in. Now, we also have to do a consultation when we look at this tax reduction scheme every year. So we did the consultation, and that's actually prompted some particular points and issues that are worthy of mention, although of course consideration is given to all the comments which are made. The responses of some of the views expressed, or the responses to some of the views expressed, are as follows. One, our scheme does provide a number of features to protect the entitlement of disabled people and their carers. For example, we disregard incomes paid specifically to meet disability or caring needs in our assessments, and typically apply a 20% addition to the enhancement or the entitlement of disabled claimants. So we do something there. Two, our scheme does allow for additional discretionary awards to be made in exceptional circumstances or in the case of hardship. We believe that this is the best way to deal with these matters by considering individual cases on their merits rather than establishing blanket rules which in the end don't fit all the cases properly. Three, the no council tax reduction if there is more than £6,000 in savings or investments. That's a common limit, and one, I believe, is applied by the DWP to Universal Credit, and also applied by 7 out of the 9 councils across Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent. Also applied this limit. However, our officers will review this to see whether changes from 2027 are appropriate. So I ask Council to agree the recommendations, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Council. Is that
Well, Madam Mayor, This report sets out the Council's pay policy statement for 26-27, which we have a statutory duty to prepare and publish. The purpose of a pay policy statement is to provide transparency in the Council's approach to setting the pay of its employees. In broad terms, the statement sets out the Council's policy on the level and elements of remuneration for each officer, and then compares the remuneration to that of the other officers, primarily the lowest pay. The report shows what should be included in the pay policy statement, how the process should unfold, the time scale, and how it should be published. Council are asked to note the reference, this is a new note, please, the reference to the attached pay policy statement to the adoption of the Living Wage Foundation rate for employees of this council, effective from the 1st of April this year. And that's in paragraph 5.9 of the report. And the financial implications are in section 6, paragraph 6.1. And there's a spoiler alert on that, Madam Mayor. Actually, it doesn't have much effect on our finances. So it's not really worth worrying about. It's not going to move the dial on our finances. Now, as the pay awards for the National Joint Council Green Book employees from 1st of April 2026 are currently under negotiation, we haven't got the figures for them, so the rates which are set out in the paper are those for 2025. We don't know 2026 as yet, they're still negotiating. The grading of job roles for chief officers and senior managers is determined by the Hay Foundation Scheme, or Evaluation Scheme, and for other staff by reference to the NJC, National Joint Council, Job Evaluation Scheme. Should also note, Madam Mayor, the Council doesn't make use of performance-related pay or bonuses. We're not bankers. The Council has a shared leadership team with Canning Chase District Council, and so the salary costs of these posts are shared between the two councils. So, Madam Mayor, I ask Council to approve the pay policy statement as set out in Appendix 1.
Thank you, Councillor. Is that seconded? Thank you, Councillor Cook. Any comments?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a question for me. So, I'm not sure it is insignificant that we now back the Living Wage Foundation, because I think that's actually a really important thing to do as a public body, and whilst maybe a small increase in our finances actually has a big impact on our employees, so I wouldn't play down its significance. My question is, are we going to continue to track the Living Wage Foundation rate as it increases? So we've committed to pay the Living Wage Foundation rate for those paid employees on council. Are we going to continue to do that as they then adjust that based on your cost of living in front of them?
No, Mayor, that will be reviewed. But we do it on an annual basis, and this is our policy for this year. We're going along with the foundation.
A point of clarification, Madam Mayor. Sorry, does that mean we are committed to doing it or not? Is it just for this year or is it ongoing? Sorry, I just want to make sure.
This is paid for this year, so that question needs to go to the officers for the cover.
That can be reviewed, Madam Mayor, for forthcoming years.
Okay.
Thank you. So the answer is no.
Any comments? I'm going to see
Absolutely.
Not that.